At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
What was your creepy mystery as a child that was confirmed by your parents to have happened? Story 1. I woke up one night when I was 12 because I had a dream that my older brother was in a car accident. I got out of bed and went downstairs to the kitchen to get something to drink. My mother was sitting there and asked why I was awake. I told her, "Had a bad dream and need something to drink." I got a glass of water when the doorbell rang. My mother went to see who was there in the middle of the night. Two police officers asked if they could come inside for a moment. I couldn't hear what they were saying because I was still in the kitchen and they were in the hallway. After the officers left, my mother came back looking completely pale and told me I should go to bed now. I asked her what was wrong, and she told me my brother had been in a car accident and she needed to wake up my dad and go to the hospital. When I pointed out that this was the bad dream I'd had before waking up, she just looked at me for a few seconds. I expected her to say, "Don't be silly, go to bed," but instead she said, "Me too." So basically, we both had the exact same dream of my brother having a car accident, and we both woke up minutes before the police arrived to tell us it had really happened. My brother survived with minor injuries, and we saw photos of the accident in the newspaper the next day. It looked exactly like in my dream, down to the smallest detail, the way he lost control, where the car flipped the first time, and the tree where it stopped. Even today, my mother and I still talk about it. Nobody else believes us when we tell the story. Story 2. When I was 9 or 10, my dad took me to visit an older hunting buddy of his. My parents were divorced, and my dad lived in another part of the country, so while I'd known this man since I was a toddler, I didn't share the same interests as either of them. The friend was a gun dealer and had lots of catalogs to order supplies, and they often spent hours going through them. We got there early, and my dad said that after an hour or two, we'd go to Hardee's for breakfast before going to shoot clay targets. I wasn't interested in hunting and was just bored, so I wandered around reading the video game magazines I'd brought. The hour or two passed quickly, and they were still downstairs. I asked if they were leaving soon, and the friend suggested I check the refrigerator for something to eat. I found nothing in the fridge, but on the kitchen table there was an apple, which I decided would be enough to hold me over. As I picked it up, his wife came in and told me, "Don't eat that. Everything in the bowl is wax." I thanked her and went back to wandering around. About 30 minutes later, I returned to the basement and asked again when we were going to Hardee's. My dad's friend asked if I was still hungry, and I told him I'd almost eaten an apple, but his wife warned me it was wax. They both gave me a blank stare, and after a long pause, my dad explained that his wife had passed away recently. I searched the house to find her, thinking they were joking, but she was nowhere to be found. Even decades later, before my dad passed away, he still insisted I must have imagined it. But I know I didn't. She told me not to eat the wax fruit. Story 3. My family was driving through the backwoods of the New Hampshire, Maine area one autumn to watch the leaves fall. We were staying at a cottage, a place we visited often. On our way back from somewhere, my mother started yelling at my father for stopping suddenly. In front of us, on an unkept back road deep in the woods of New England late at night, there was a traffic jam of cars stopped in all directions. I remember lots of bright headlights. I also remember my dad's face as he turned around to reverse the car. My mom went completely silent. My dad said in an eerily calm voice, "I hate traffic." He turned around and started driving back the way we'd come, passing cars that flashed their headlights at us. The mood shifted from "what a fun day" to "let's leave." Even as a kid, I went quiet. Cars came up behind us, honking and flashing their lights. Eventually, they turned off the road and we made it back to the cottage. Decades later, my dad and I were having a beer, and he asked, "Remember that weird traffic jam up north?" I said yes, and he told me he and my mom thought it was an ambush, where people block the road to rob or harm you. He asked if I remembered the cars trying to block us in or chasing us until we reached a certain route. I vaguely remembered, but assumed it was just strange traffic. He didn't say much more after that and changed the subject to planting trees in the backyard. Story 4. When I was a kid, my family lived in a blue house with an unusual layout. One year, the house was badly damaged by a flood, and they had to knock down a wall between the living room and kitchen. After that, you could see straight down the hall to my parents' bedroom door. The house always felt strange. I was a terrible sleeper as a child and often went to the living room early in the morning to watch cartoons quietly. One morning, I was sitting in a chair with my feet up on a window. From there, I could see over the kitchen counter down the hall. A movement caught my eye. I looked up and saw the shadowy outline of a man walking toward me near my parents' door. Thinking it was my dad, I said something like, "Hey, Dad, sorry if the TV was too loud." There was no response. Moments later, my foot accidentally went through the window, and I screamed. My parents ran out of their bedroom to see what had happened. It wasn't until much later that I realized there was no way the figure I saw was my dad. He had come running from the bedroom after I screamed, and the shadow's shoulders were much higher than my dad's. Years later, after we'd moved away, my mom and I were reminiscing. When I mentioned the strange feeling that house gave me, her response was, "Oh, you must have seen the shadow man too. The picture from the front has the front door and my room's window. That right side was the second hallway that had my room on one end and my sister's room on the other with a bathroom between. The side picture, you can see how the house goes back. The very back was my parents' room. I put my foot through the middle of the three windows on the second picture." Story 5. At my parents' house, I used to hear my mom calling out to me when she hadn't, and she confirmed she would hear me call out to her when I hadn't. That was a common occurrence. Also, whenever I was alone for a little while, if my mom was late from work or at the grocery store, I'd usually be in the main living room playing N64. I would often hear loud banging sounds from upstairs, as if a heavy piece of furniture had tipped over. I would go check, and nothing was ever out of place. Both my mother and grandmother have confirmed similar experiences when they were alone in the house. There was also a time I was downstairs on my laptop. Everyone else was in bed, it was after midnight, and I hadn't realized how dark it had gotten without the lights on. I was zoned out when I began to hear what sounded like murmuring from behind me, like the low rumble you'd hear at a gathering when people are talking, but you can't make out the words. The hairs on my neck stood up immediately, and my body froze with fear. Tears ran down my face from the physical reaction I was having. I refused to acknowledge it and kept staring at my laptop screen in silence. It took forever for my body to return to normal. Sometime later, I told my mother what had happened, and it unsettled her because she said she had heard the murmuring as well. I have always hated that house. Story 6. My grandmother was a real estate agent in Rhode Island. I was staying with her one summer, and she had to take me along to see a potential listing. It was a very unusual house because it was circular. All the rooms went along the outside and connected to each other, and there was a center part with a little garden that was open to the sky. She went up to the second story, and I stayed downstairs because I wanted to walk around the loop one time. The problem started when I had walked a full loop and didn't see the stairs. I thought I must be confused, so I kept going to the next room and still couldn't find them. I started to panic, so I began running around the house as fast as possible, checking every room for stairs, and there weren't any. Finally, I sat down by the front door and started crying. A little while later, my grandmother ran into the entryway, looking just as panicked as I was, asking where I had been hiding and why I wasn't answering her calling out to me. I told her I never heard her calling out to me at all. The house had seemed so still and quiet while I was sitting there that I was convinced she had forgotten and left me there. We went home and didn't really talk about it. About 15 years later, I brought it up to my mom and asked if she knew anything or if this was just a strange childhood nightmare I was remembering. She told me she remembered it clearly because my grandmother had called her, absolutely shaken, because she couldn't explain what had happened and thought she had lost me, or that I had been taken by someone while she was distracted. She had apparently been looking for me for quite a while. I still don't understand what happened. Because the house wasn't even large or confusing to navigate, I still get chills when I think about it. Story 7. I'm not 100% sure this fits because my mom confirmed it years ago, then denied it when I asked her again recently, but here it is. When I was little, my dresser, which was long but pretty short, sat against the wall with one of the ends pointed toward my door. That dresser was heavy, an old wooden one with all sorts of neatly arranged items on top. Since it was in my bedroom, the floor was carpeted. I always slept with the door closed. One night, with no explanation, the dresser tipped over. But instead of falling forward, it fell 180 degrees to the side, landing in front of my door, all my belongings spilling to the side. My mom ran to get me but couldn't open the door as it was being blocked by the dresser. Eventually, with her pushing and me pulling on the dresser, she was able to slip in and move it out of the way.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Nothing was damaged, not even the glass figurines I had. My dad helped put it upright the next day, and we moved on. Years later, I remembered the incident and asked my mom about it, expecting to learn that I had blown it out of proportion and it had only fallen forward or something like that. No, she remembered that night as well. However, she added one detail that I could never figure out. She thought she heard me jumping on the bed that night, which was why she thought the dresser tipped over. I had been asleep. I have no idea where she heard that noise coming from. Story 8. I woke up one morning, and the shoelace from one of my sneakers had completely vanished, just on one shoe. The lace on the other shoe was still there. I never removed the laces from my shoes. The shoes were right beside my bed all night. I have always been a ridiculously light sleeper. The slightest sound wakes me up, and nothing woke me that night. Moreover, the door to my room was closed. The floorboards creaked whenever anyone stepped on them, and the room was small. I would have noticed someone coming in. Nothing else was disturbed in the entire house. Nothing had been moved or taken, and there were no signs of forced entry. My mom noticed nothing all night. She also has no sense of humor. There was nobody in the house aside from me and her, and nobody but us had the keys. We didn't have mice, and there were no traces of the missing lace anywhere. There is absolutely no way that shoelace could have gone missing. My mom remembers it well, but as soon as I mention it, she immediately doesn't want to talk about it because it unsettles her. Either somebody broke into the house and did nothing except take a single shoelace, or something else entirely happened. Story 9. When I was a kid, my mom used to work at a small grocery store, and she would go there before breakfast to get fresh bakery goods when she had the afternoon shift. Then she would wake me up for school and ask how I slept, and I would tell her what dream I had that night, if any. One morning I told her I had dreamed that two men broke into the store and left a red screwdriver on the floor. My mom was shocked because there had really been a break-in that night. That was why she couldn't buy breakfast that morning. But she couldn't talk with the police or colleagues at the time to get more details. I then went to school, and my mom did the afternoon shift. That evening when she came home, she told me that the police had indeed found a screwdriver on the scene, which belonged to the burglar or burglars. This all happened in Europe, in a small town in the early 1990s, with no CCTV, and the burglars never got caught. My mom made me fill out a lottery ticket the next day, but I never won with it and never had such dreams again. Storytime. When I was a baby, my mom rented a house from a friend who claimed it was haunted. She didn't believe it until she would hear 1 or 2 year old me sitting in my bed talking to two men that I had said lived in the ceiling. She always thought my older sister would leave the TV on, thinking that was where the voices came from, until she heard me speaking back in my baby or toddler talk to them. She said that in the last month we lived there, when I was a little over 2, she was in the bathroom directly across from my bedroom when she heard a man talking in my room. It was late, I was supposed to be asleep, and my mom said she froze and listened. She couldn't understand what he was saying. Then another man started talking, and she was unsettled and hoping I was asleep, and the men were just breaking in and would come out and leave me alone. Then she heard me talking, and she rushed into the room. She said she practically broke the doorknob and saw nothing but me in my toddler bed. She said I looked at her with an annoyed face and seemed upset. She asked who I was talking to, and I told her, I was talking to the angels. Apparently, I pointed to the ceiling and got angry with her, saying, you made them go away. I don't remember any of it, just what she told me. She believes in all those TV psychics and ghosts. While I try to hold back from telling her how psychics are fake and ghosts are probably not real. Story 11. When I was growing up, I lived in a small bungalow with my parents. My room was directly beside my parents' room. I had a fish tank with a light, and I used this as a sleep aid. The dim light of the tank and the bubbling sound of the filter put me at ease. One night, I woke up and saw the outline of a man wearing a trench coat and a top hat standing beside my bed looking at me. Naturally, I screamed as loud as I could, and my parents came running into the room. They turned the light on, but the man was gone. They comforted me back to sleep, and that's all I remember about that night. Fast forward 3 or 4 years. I moved my room to the basement, and my parents knocked down the wall to make their room bigger, but they kept their bed in the exact same place. Over the next year, I would wake up to screams from upstairs and hear my mom crying. She would always see the outline of a man standing in the exact place where I had seen him before. They even moved their bed to try to put it where the figure would appear, hoping to stop it from showing up. It still scares me to this day thinking about that house, and I'm glad I'm nowhere near it anymore. Story 12. I live in Colombia, and my father is a doctor. While I was growing up, his main work was as hospital director of some of the most isolated hospitals in rural areas. The good thing is that you get used to strange sounds at night and the silent night watchmen, mostly older men, walking around without even a flashlight. Most of the hospitals we lived in were new and well-maintained until we moved to an old town in the south of the country. That hospital was only partially renovated. Most of the building was still the old public retirement home, or sanatorium, if you could call it that, with parts basically destroyed. Falling ceilings, broken walls, you get the picture. One of my hobbies was spending the evening playing dominoes with the head nurse and the night watchman and joining them on their rounds. One night I was with Pascual walking around one of the old areas when I suddenly felt the urge to look back. There it was, a white-gray shadowy figure in front of a boarded-up room that always gave me the creeps. I remember gripping his hand tightly and he told me, "Just don't look. She likes to scare people. And if you look for too long, she can get inside you." At that point, I was honestly more terrified by how calm he was than by the apparition itself. I ended up building up the courage to walk through a bushy area behind the buildings, where the ambulances used to park, just to avoid passing near that cursed room. Story 13. When I was 10 years old, I often visited a friend who lived about 4 miles away. To get there, I had to walk next to a huge cornfield with only a couple of houses along the way. After spending time at his house, I would walk back home. The street I walked on was usually empty. Rarely would anyone be out walking a dog or jogging, so I was alone most of the time. The houses always seemed abandoned, with windows boarded up and doors permanently shut. One day on my way back home, my shoelace came loose. I bent over to tie it. All of a sudden, I saw a shadow reaching over me. I quickly looked behind me and saw an old woman with short black hair and the most unsettling smile, standing just inches away from my shoulder and reaching toward me. I immediately ran for my life, only turning around once to see her still standing there, still staring at me with that same disturbing smile. I ran all the way home and broke down crying when I got inside. My parents told me nobody lived in those houses. Over the last 11 years, I've walked past that same house a few more times, but I've never seen anyone near it again, and it's still empty. Story 14. I was looking for a Halloween costume with my mom to wear to elementary school, which was a big deal to me because I had been homeschooled before that. We spent hours going to several stores and couldn't find anything I liked. It was getting dark, so we had to find something soon. As a last try, we decided to go to an old Halloween costume store, one of those strange places that stays open all year. We got out of the car, walked through the front doors, and took about 3 steps inside. Instantly, every hair on my body stood on end. I felt a heavy, oppressive pressure all over me. The physical sensation of being hated by something that wanted to hurt me and wanted me gone. My little third-grade self turned to look at my mom at the same instant she turned to look at me. Without saying a word, we both turned around and walked out, got back in the car, and left. I remember asking my mom if she felt the same thing, and she said yes. We prayed together in the car before driving off. For perspective, I was a kid who desperately wanted to fit in with my new classmates and had been determined to find the perfect costume. Yet I willingly left our last chance to find one because of that awful feeling. Even now, as an adult, I can remember exactly how bad it felt, and just writing about it makes me tense. I did end up with a costume that year, though. We went home, and my mom stayed up late with me making a cowboy outfit from things we had. A cowboy hat from my grandpa, some boots, a button-down shirt we ripped to make it rugged, a bright red bandana, and a leather vest made from a brown grocery bag with tassels cut into it. Story 15. This is a little embarrassing. My mom got an IUD after my sister and I were born. 4 years after my sister's birth, a random priest stopped her in the street and told her, "Why are you stopping Goddess Durga's will? She wants to gift you a son." My mom was understandably startled. It's not that my family didn't want a son. The cultural preference for sons in some parts of Asia is real. But they weren't trying for another child because they didn't want to risk having another daughter. A few days later, we had a kirtan, a musical prayer gathering, and one of the women there went into what's called Mata Ana, a trance state in which the person is believed to be possessed by the goddess and speaks in an intense, almost otherworldly way. This woman, a stranger to us, looked straight at my mom, handed her an apple, and said, "Eat it and remove that foreign thing. I want to give you a son. How dare you deny me my wish?" Word of this spread quickly, and suddenly half the town seemed invested in my parents' private lives. My mom still didn't change her mind right away. But then my parents met another priest they considered a teacher, and he told them they should try and let what was meant to be happen. Within a year, I had a brother. It was the most talked about 9 months in our town, especially since gender testing was illegal in India to prevent female feticide. So no one knew if the baby would be a boy or girl until he was born. Story 16. Some of our family friends own a very old house in upstate New York that was once part of the Underground Railroad. The house has a ton of history and secret passageways throughout it. It's also believed to be haunted. Every time someone new visits, strange things happen. My cousin has heard breathing in his room at night when he stays there, and the woman who owns the house often has to turn the TV back on because the ghost, who they call Morton, after a previous owner who died in the house, keeps turning it off. The youngest son tells a story about sitting in the kitchen when a large old china cabinet, which was against the wall where a door to the backyard used to be, smoothly and silently swung forward like a door opening. He said it was just as if someone was walking outside. The youngest daughter's room had a hidden trap door under the floor where escaped slaves once hid. Multiple times, she woke up to find the rug covering the door moved aside, as if it had been opened during the night. It's unsettling, but they all say that when Morton visits, it doesn't feel malevolent or angry. They believe he's just living in his house as he always did, and they're sharing the space with him. They've lived there for over 20 years and have no plans to leave, even with all the unusual activity happening around them. Story 17. I was raised solely by my mother. When I was about 6 years old, I frequently had a recurring dream in which I was a man riding a motorcycle in full gear along the side of a tall cliff. Or at least that's what it looked like to me as a child. I was going too fast and made a sudden turn, and as I rounded the bend, a semi-truck came out of nowhere in my lane, heading toward me. I tried to make a sharp turn to save myself, but realized I would go over the cliff. I overcorrected and ended up sliding under the truck while the driver tried to regain control. I felt my knee hit the pavement and then hit my head on something underneath as I fell off the bike. The wheels approached. I stopped having the dream when I was 10, and I didn't think much about it afterward, though I'd told my mom about it dozens of times by then. When I was 17, the child support agency finally tracked down my father. We found out he was the man from my dream. He had been paralyzed from the waist down in an accident that happened exactly as I had dreamed it. He spent several years in a coma, which lined up with the time I was having those dreams, from age 6 to 10. He still wanted nothing to do with me and asked not to be held responsible for child support, and we let it go. By then, I wanted nothing from him, but I was stunned at how accurately I had described what happened to him without ever having met him. Story 18. I was in 7th grade when my parents bought their first computer, so I wasn't super young. We had a small ranch-style house, so my dad built a corner desk in the basement in one of the finished rooms, since there was no space elsewhere. My dad had built the house in the mid-80s, and no one had lived there before us. When my mom would get home from work, we'd hear her set down her keys on the counter and walk across the kitchen floor in her heels. It happened often enough that my brother or I would be on the computer and hear those exact sounds, the keys being placed down and her footsteps across the floor, only to go upstairs and find she wasn't home yet. We told her about it, and it happened enough that we started noting the times when it occurred. A few times she said she'd been thinking about work right then and happened to look at the clock. We never figured out why it happened so consistently. My mom also mentioned that while she was on the computer, she'd sometimes hear someone moving around upstairs, even though no one else was home. My dad didn't allow pets in the house, so it wasn't a case of an animal making noise. To this day, we have no explanation. Story 19. This one really unsettled me. I grew up in Burton-upon-Trent, and as a kid, I was fascinated by medieval-era history. Castles, knights, all of it. One time we visited Tutbury Castle. I was enjoying myself until we reached the gate, when I suddenly felt a strong grip on my shoulder. I screamed. My parents asked me what was wrong, but I noticed a strange expression on their faces, which made me think they had felt it too. We left shortly afterward, and I never went back. Soon after, I felt like I was constantly being watched. I would look into the garden and see a figure twitching, and I would end up in tears in my room. It got so bad we had to switch rooms. For a year, I felt chased by whatever it was until we moved to Basingstoke. After that, I no longer felt pursued or watched, and my teenage years were normal. About a decade ago, I returned from the U.S. to visit my parents and told them what I remembered. They admitted that they had seen and experienced the same things back then, but hadn't told me because they didn't want to scare me. We laughed about it, but even now, thinking about it still gives me chills. Story 20. When I was around 7 years old, my parents bought an old 19 Sarah villa. They moved it an hour from its original location to their land and restored it. It had ornate pillars and arches in the central hallway, detailed molded patterns in the ceilings around the light fittings that were about 3 meters high, vertical sliding windows with hanging steel counterweights on ropes, all those grand old-fashioned details. When we first viewed it before it was cut in half and moved, the place was completely cleared out. Just walls, floors, and roof. In the front room, there was an old man, probably in his 80s, sitting in a tall wingback chair in front of the windows, holding a newspaper. He didn't respond when I tried to speak to him from the doorway. I figured he was just a grumpy old man ignoring kids. I asked my mom who he was and why he was sitting in the middle of an empty room. She told me not to be silly, then took me back to the now empty room. The chair and the man were gone, which completely baffled me. After we moved in, strange things started happening at night. We had an external diesel water boiler for heating the radiators, with pipework under the floors to circulate the hot water. Every night there would be creaking sounds for 15 to 20 minutes, like wood tapping on wood, moving from room to room. I was told it was just the pipes heating up, but I later learned it only took about 5 minutes to heat the whole system, not a slow process like that. And along with the creaks came slow, clear footsteps going up and down the hallway most nights, passing doorways when no one was there. My sister and I shared a room. At night, my dad would sometimes poke his head in to check if we were asleep, and the hallway desk lamp would silhouette him in the doorway. One night, I saw a silhouette, but it wasn't my dad. The figure was shorter than my dad and taller than my mom. I froze completely, unable to move. Over the years, I would wake up feeling watched and see him standing in the doorway, looking from one bed to the other, sometimes giving a small wave as if to say, "Go back to sleep," before silently walking down the hallway toward the front room where I'd seen the man in the chair. For years, that room remained mostly empty. Eventually, it became less frightening. I'd sometimes catch glimpses of him out of the corner of my eye in the hallway. Everyone in the family acknowledged his presence, referring to him as the guy keeping an eye on his house. It never stopped until we moved out and the villa was moved again, 15 years later. After we left, my sister brought up the man in the doorway, and my parents confirmed they had seen him too. I've never believed in ghosts, but I have no other explanation for years of seeing and interacting with something that seemed both present and absent at the same time. Story 21. I bought a small lake cabin about 20 years ago when my kids were young. It had two bedrooms, one bathroom, nice lake views, and a pier. Since I was divorced, my kids visited often. One bedroom was theirs, but my daughter always wanted to sleep in my room, and my son always slept on the couch. They rarely played in their room at all. This went on for years. When my daughter got older and stopped coming, my son still slept on the couch, even with overnight guests. They just crash in the den. One day I had to crawl under the house through a section of the foundation where the two bedrooms had been added to what was once a smaller cabin. While crawling with a flashlight, I noticed an odd piece of stone. Crawling closer, I saw it was a flat headstone for a man buried in 1932, right under my kid's bedroom. Now I can't help but wonder if that's why neither of them ever wanted to sleep there. Story 22. My dad had a home office in an unused bedroom across from his and my mom's room. He ran a part-time consulting business from there. My brother and I had our rooms on another floor and rarely went in, except if we needed to use the stapler or hole punch for schoolwork. The room had a large wooden desk, file cabinets, and a long table with a printer and fax machine. One day, Dad was frantically searching the house for his wallet. We all pitched in, checking every possible spot. He even checked the cars and drove to his full-time office, but no luck. After 2 weeks, he canceled his credit cards and bank cards and was about to get a new driver's license. Then one day I went in to sharpen a pencil using the sharpener on the table in his office. Right there on the front of the table, in plain sight where no one could miss it, was Dad's wallet. We have no idea where it had been for those 2 weeks. When we eventually moved out of that house, my mom and I made sure to open every drawer and door so we wouldn't forget anything. A few weeks later, the new owner called, saying they had found a box of our important papers, birth certificates, medical records, my parents' marriage certificate, sitting in an unfinished basement room. We never stored anything down there because it was damp, and certainly not documents like that. Story 23. When I was 19, I was staying at my parents' house in the middle of nowhere while they were out of town. It was late fall and chilly outside. I was wearing pajama pants, a t-shirt, and fuzzy socks. I had locked up for the night. The house was small with three doors to the outside, one of them being a sliding glass door in the guest room I was staying in. Around 8:30 p.m., I sat down in bed to read a book. I got maybe four pages in when I suddenly woke up outside the guest room, pounding on the door, yelling and trying to get inside. I was completely naked. All the doors to the house were still locked, no windows were open, and the light in my room was still on. My legs and feet were dirty and scratched, as if I had been running through the woods. I had to dig through the trash to find a cat food can lid to use to break the lock and get back inside. When I finally got in, it was around 3 a.m., about half an hour since I'd woken up outside, but 6 hours since I'd last been in bed. I never found my book or my pajamas. I've never before or since had an experience where I blacked out or couldn't remember falling asleep. I had been eating at home, hadn't been drinking or using drugs, and I couldn't explain how I got outside or where those missing hours went. I didn't feel like I'd been assaulted. There were no signs of injury beyond the scratches on my legs and feet. When I told my family, my brother mentioned that he had stayed in that room a few weeks earlier. He said he'd seen strange lights outside the window and heard knocking at one point, but he chalked it up to his imagination and never told anyone. Story 24. This happened in the 1970s when I was about 5 years old and still believed in Santa Claus. We lived in the country, never locked our doors, and in the summer the windows were wide open. One night my mom heard a noise. She woke my dad, but he told her it was nothing. A few minutes later she asked again if he'd heard it. Still nothing. Then we all heard banjo music coming from the living room. My mom asked, "Surely you hear that?" By then, I could hear it from my bedroom. I came out at the same time my parents did, just as my mom or dad switched on the living room light. There in the chair where our Christmas tree usually sat in winter was an older man with white hair and a beard, wearing a hat and brown jacket, playing a banjo. In my little five-year-old mind, it had to be Santa paying a summertime visit. I yelled, "Santa!" and ran toward him, but my mom stopped me and took me back to my room. What I learned much later was that my dad had asked the man what he was doing in our house. He called himself a hobo, a lost and tired traveler looking for a place to rest. He said he thought no one was home. My dad told him, "My daughter thinks you're Santa. I want you to empty your pockets to show you have no weapons, then sit there while I bring her out so you can ho 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 and ask if she's been a good girl. My wife will make you something to eat, and I'll drive you to the Greyhound station with money for a ticket a few towns over." The man agreed, saying he had a knife in his bag, but no intention of using it as a weapon. My dad brought me back out. Santa played a few Christmas songs and even an Elvis tune. I asked for a banjo for Christmas, and he told me, maybe, before giving me a harmonica from his pocket, which my mom quickly took away. My mom fed him, my dad gave him money, and they drove him to the station. As a teen, I brought it up again, thinking my parents had hired someone to cheer me up because I'd been having health issues that summer. My mom said, "No, that still creeps me out," and told me the truth. Even though it's unsettling as an adult, I still remember it as a magical experience from my childhood. Story 25. When I was very young, maybe 3 years old, I was playing alone with marbles. My favorite marble rolled under the couch, so I reached under to get it, but couldn't find it. Moments after I pulled my hand back, a hand reached out from under the couch where mine had just been. It was aged, wrinkled, and very dark-skinned. It groped around as if searching for me, then pulled back under the couch before reappearing and pushing out some bits of trash, plastic wrappers and other debris. I sat there at a safe distance, not exactly afraid, but knowing this was not normal. The hand stayed there for a moment, and I thought, that trash is bait. It wants me to take it so it can grab me. When I didn't move, the hand disappeared again, only to reemerge with more trash. I remember one item clearly, a yellow plastic package for Bic pens with their little logo. When I still didn't take anything, the hand gathered up the trash and retreated beneath the couch. I went to my mom and calmly told her a hand had reached out from under the couch. She looked confused and assured me there was nothing there. She stuck her own hand under to show me, which worried me even more. Later that evening, my dad lifted the couch so I could retrieve my marble, along with several others I hadn't realized I'd lost. But none of the trash the hand had pushed out was under there. For the rest of my childhood, I avoided dark spaces under furniture, believing a hand could reach out and pull me in. I assumed it had just been a vivid dream. But in my late teens, while talking to my mom about dreams, I mentioned it, and she said it had really happened. She remembered the day I'd told her, and she admitted it had disturbed her because I wasn't the type to make things up. She also said they soon got rid of the couch, which they had bought used, after learning from the seller that an elderly woman had died while sleeping on it. Even now, I still think about it. I've never been able to make sense of why the hand offered me garbage instead of my marble, or why it would try to bait me at all. It remains one of the most bizarre and unsettling experiences of my life. Story 26. When I was a child, I lost all my memories after. According to my parents, I fell from a new balcony my dad was building at the time. From the day I came home from the hospital, I would be visited at night by what I believed was a ghost. It always felt like an angry presence that hated me, though I didn't understand why it targeted me. It would scare and terrorize me to the point where I would cry myself to sleep every night. One night, feeling completely helpless, I yelled out, "Please stop, I just don't want to be sad anymore." After that night, it all stopped. A few years later, I began hearing footsteps in my room at night, but I didn't connect it to my earlier experiences. One night, I finally got fed up and was about to swing my fist toward the noise, but I froze mid-swing. Standing beside me was a very young boy, maybe around 4 years old, soaking wet. It took me a moment to process what I was seeing. When I reached out to touch him, he felt solid. I got up and placed him on my bed, wrapping him in a blanket because he was so cold. As I did, I asked, "Who are you? How did you get in? Are you hurt?" All he said, over and over, was that he was sorry for being mean to me, but he had been very angry. Confused, I told him to stay put while I went to wake my parents. They looked mildly irritated when I told them, but when I returned to my room, I collapsed to the floor. The boy was gone. My parents' room was just down the hall, so I would have seen him leave. For a moment, they thought I was imagining things, but then they saw what looked like small, wet footprints leading from my door to my bed, and the blanket still shaped like a small person had been lying there. They asked what he looked like, and when I described him, their faces went pale. They brought out an old photo album and pointed to a picture of a young boy. It was him. I asked who he was, and in the photo I could see myself playing with him. They told me he was my twin brother who had died years earlier. In that instant, all my memories came flooding back. I remembered the day he died. We had been playing in a field across from our house and got into an argument. I told him to run home, and as soon as he stepped into the road, he was hit by a car and died instantly. For a long time afterward, I was deeply depressed and kept hearing his voice in my head. The final memory was of the day I fell off the balcony. I remembered hearing his voice calling to me. I saw him standing there, and I ran toward him at full speed, right off the balcony. After I lost my memory, my parents decided to keep the truth about my brother from me, believing it was for the best. Story 27. I grew up in a strict Pentecostal household. I couldn't wear shorts as a boy, we couldn't watch TV, and women weren't allowed to cut their hair or wear makeup. Needless to say, I knew very little about the world outside of church and school. When I was about 5 or 6, I had a vivid dream in which I was an adult in Las Vegas. I had gambled away all my money and sat at a table with my head down in distress. I felt a comforting hand on my shoulder, as if reassuring me everything would be okay. At that age, I had never seen Las Vegas, didn't have access to movies or TV, and had no way of even knowing gambling existed. When I woke up, I saw what I swear was an angel in the corner of my room, looking down at me from near the ceiling. I called for my mom, but was too afraid to speak loudly. After that, things became fuzzy, but I still believe I truly saw something that night. My parents, being very religious, also thought it might have been real. Even now, at 46 years old, I still wonder how a child like me could have known about that kind of scene unless there was more to it than just a dream. Story 28. When I was 6 or 7, a neighbor across the hall was murdered by her husband. I remember peeking through the keyhole and seeing her being taken out on a stretcher. I didn't realize she had died until I overheard my mother telling someone. Not long after, I began having what I think were night terrors. In them, I saw a man who looked like my father and a woman walking through a maze surrounded by roses. She was terrified, and I could hear her breathing getting louder and louder until it felt like it was right in my ear. Then I would wake up. The dream repeated several times until we moved. Years later, I asked my mom what had happened to that family. She said they moved soon after, and everyone who lived in that apartment afterward requested to be transferred within a few months because they heard strange panting sounds or had nightmares, especially the children. My dad once stayed in that apartment after an argument with my mom, breaking in when it was vacant. He didn't last the night. My mom said he came back at 3 or 4 a.m., almost pleading to be let in, and for a while afterward he drank less and was less violent toward her. He never explained what happened. The woman had been stabbed and died slowly. Story 29. A few years ago, my grandfather was diagnosed with liver failure and given only a few months to live. We were very close. We would go for walks, take photos together, and his tradition was that any visitor had to play cribbage with him. I never learned how, so I would just watch my dad play against him. Eventually, his liver gave out, and he passed away in his sleep. I had seen him the day before and told him it was okay to go, though he was unresponsive. It broke my heart that I couldn't be there when he passed. A few days later, I was in my room and found a blue cribbage peg on the floor next to my desk. The crib board had been missing for months, and no one in my family played cribbage except with my grandfather. My bedroom door is always closed, and there was no way the peg could have just rolled in by accident. My parents hadn't been in my room, and they hadn't seen or used the crib board. When I showed them the peg, they both got goosebumps. We believe it was my grandfather's way of saying goodbye. Story 30. My grandmother passed away almost exactly 10 years ago. She had always had lung problems, and pneumonia finally took her. I stayed at her house with my grandfather that week to help him cope. She died on a Monday, and the funeral was set for Friday. On Wednesday night, while looking for batteries for the remote, I went into the dining room and suddenly noticed a strange smell in the middle of the room. It was like the dusty scent you get when you turn on the furnace for the first time in winter, but mixed with a floral fragrance, maybe lavender. My grandmother wasn't one for perfume, and they didn't keep potpourri, so it stood out. The scent was calming yet concerning, and I began checking outlets in the basement for any sign of an electrical issue. The smell stayed in that one spot and nowhere else. I told my grandfather, but he couldn't smell it. We checked together, found nothing, and eventually the smell faded. After the funeral on Friday, I mentioned it to my uncle, a very practical math teacher, as a possible safety concern. He said, if it were an electrical fire, we'd all be dead by now. I think it was Grandma. She had spent a lot of time in that room, often sitting by the front window, talking to a neighbor on the phone, and gossiping about the neighborhood. A few days later, I visited her grave. As soon as I got out of the car, I smelled the exact same scent. My husband couldn't smell it at all. The fragrance stayed with me for half the drive home before it drifted away peacefully, leaving me feeling comforted, almost like I'd been given a hug. Years later, I mentioned this to my family, and my stepdad admitted that he had smelled it too on the day of the funeral, though no one else could. On the 10th anniversary of her death, I brought flowers to her grave and smelled it again, faint but just as comforting. Story 31. When I was around 5 or 6, my parents and I went camping for a week. We were in a wooded area with a campground, but you could set up your tent anywhere inside it. My dad, brother, and I love fishing, so we picked a spot deeper in the woods near a stream. My parents had one tent, and my brother and I shared another. On the second night, I needed to use the bathroom after dark. I got up and went outside. Across the stream, I saw a person standing there, just watching me. I went behind a bush, finished my business, and went back to my tent. The next night, I heard splashing in the water. Looking out, I saw the same person again. I went to my parents' tent and got my dad, but by the time he came out, the person was gone. By the fourth night, I was too scared to sleep. I kept watch through the zipper of the tent, and sure enough, I saw the person standing on the opposite bank again. I grabbed my flashlight and shined it on them, but before I could get a good look, they ran into the forest. I called for my dad again, but he still didn't believe me. On the fifth night, I begged my parents to let me sleep in their tent. My mom finally agreed. When they fell asleep, I went to the zipper to keep watch. When I saw the man again, I woke my dad and showed him. He saw him too, grabbed his gun, and woke my mom, telling us to stay put. My mom looked terrified. 5 minutes later, my dad came back and told us to pack up. We left the campsite around midnight. Years later, I asked my dad about it, thinking it might have been a dream or something from TV. He confirmed it happened. He told me that when he shined the flashlight on the man, he saw that he was enormous, a giant of a man. The man ran back into the forest, but when my dad swung the light around, he saw movement just beyond the beam. He decided we should leave immediately, and as we packed up, he kept the gun and flashlight pointed toward the stream. He said he could still see the man moving around in the darkness, though never clearly enough to make out details. Story 32. I was taking a shower when, as I reached for my towel, someone else seemed to grab it and shake it violently. I screamed and tried to run out of the bathroom, but there was a figure sitting on the toilet. I had never seen her before, and she appeared translucent. I screamed again and shut the shower curtain. My brother ran in to check on me, and I bolted out of the bathroom, with my mom right behind him. After I got dressed, still wet and shaken, I described what happened and what the woman looked like. My mom became convinced it was my great-aunt Alberta from my dad's side, who had once tried to take me when I was a baby. As she was telling me the story, the phone rang. We found out that great-aunt Alberta had just passed away. My dad went to her funeral alone, since we lived in another state. When he came back, he brought one of the memorial photos of her. Seeing it terrified me. It was the same woman I'd seen on the toilet. After that, my mom started believing I could see the dead. 2 years later, when I was 14, I was at home with my mom. She was downstairs folding laundry, and I yelled a math joke to her about imaginary numbers. I heard her coming up the stairs and saw her step into the kitchen, look at me, laugh, and walk toward her bedroom carrying laundry. I followed her to keep talking, but when I got there, the room was empty. Then I heard her voice coming from the kitchen, asking who I was talking to. She walked into her room moments later. I froze, feeling faint. When I explained what happened, she saw how shaken I was. That same year, I was watching a movie in the basement while home alone. My grandmother had recently passed away, and my parents were in Arkansas packing her things. My brother was supposed to be out until evening. Around 6:50 p.m., I heard commotion upstairs and thought my brother was home early. I went upstairs, but the noise stopped halfway up. The door was locked, the driveway was empty, and no one was there. I went to the bathroom, and then I heard more noises from the kitchen. Thinking my brother was trying to scare me, I snuck out to catch him. Instead, I found all the kitchen furniture moved into the living room, the table upside down with the chair stacked on top, and every door, cabinet, and drawer in the house standing open. The front door was unlocked and open. As I stood there in shock, my brother pulled into the driveway. I ran outside crying and told him to look inside. When my parents and grandfather came home later, we started putting everything back. My dad noticed an old Donald Duck alarm clock balanced upside down on one of the living room ceiling fan blades. The vaulted ceiling made it impossible for any of us to have done that without a ladder, and even then, balancing it that way would have been nearly impossible. My family had a lot of strange, unexplained things happen in that house. Story 33. This happened between my dad and my grandpa, and both have told me about it. When my dad was a teenager, he lived in southern Idaho and would often go hunting with my grandpa out in the wilderness. On one of these hunting trips, they left town on Friday afternoon after they both got out of school. My grandpa was a PE teacher and planned to camp in the bush, then hunt Saturday and Sunday. The next morning, they got up really early, around 3 or 4 a.m., when it was still dark out, to hike to their hunting spot. They kept their lights off because the moonlight was bright enough that they didn't need flashlights. Plus, they didn't want to alert any potential prey. As they were hiking, my dad turned around to look at the shallow valley below them and noticed a bright red light buzzing around the valley extremely fast, making absolutely no sound. They were the only humans for miles around, and this was back in the 70s, so drones weren't a thing at the time. After a few moments of staring at the light, my grandpa whispered to my dad to keep moving. They kept walking, and my dad would occasionally check behind him and see the red light was still there. Eventually, my grandpa stopped along a ridge, got down on his stomach, and pulled out his binoculars. It was then that he revealed he had seen the light all the way back at their campsite among the brush and tall grass, and he wanted to get far away before my dad noticed. They spent quite a while watching it from above. It moved around so randomly that they couldn't figure out what it was doing. Dawn was just starting to rise, but it was still fairly dark. My dad then turned on his headlamp to look for his own binoculars when the light suddenly let out an extremely loud screeching sound. Both of them said it left their ears ringing for quite a while afterward. When the sound stopped, it quickly bolted off toward the sunrise. They were both so unsettled that they refused to move from their hiding spot until the sun had fully risen. They spent the rest of the day slowly walking back to their campsite and immediately packed up to leave the area. Story 34. I used to have nightmares about a humanoid creature. It was tall, skinny, bald, and had a hole in its chest. I always thought it was something I must have seen in a movie or a music video my mom watched since she was a horror fanatic. The recurring nightmare was that I would be playing with my dolls when it would suddenly appear, pick me up, and carry me around while telling me it was going to cook me and eat me, making my mom watch. Sometimes it would even say it would make my mom eat me too. When I was about 19, almost 20, I had the exact same nightmare again and ended up wetting the bed in my mom's guest room. I went to tell her what happened and asked for her help. She was angry at first and wanted to know what could cause someone my age to wet the bed. I told her about the nightmare, and she stopped helping with the sheets. She just stood there for a few seconds, then her eyes started to fill with tears. I was confused and asked her what was wrong. She didn't answer right away, so I walked around the bed and hugged her. That's when she started crying and told me she was sorry, that she didn't think I would remember. I asked her what she meant, and she told me about a man she had dated when I was almost 3. He was, according to her, horribly abusive to both of us. He was tall, skinny, bald, and had a health condition that caused his chest to cave inward, making it look like a hole covered by skin. Apparently, him picking me up and saying he was going to eat me was the final straw for her. In real life, according to her, I had been playing with Barbies in a makeshift bowl pool in the front yard while they were barbecuing. He went inside to get a specific bowl, couldn't find it, and came back outside to see that I had my dolls and the one he wanted. He completely lost his temper. It escalated to him picking me up, threatening my mother, and telling her he was going to put me on the grill and make her eat me. Somehow, she managed to calm him down and got through the evening until he got drunk. At that point, she called her grandmother to come pick us up. That's all according to her, because I still can't remember the actual event. Story 35. When I was really little, maybe around 4 or 5 years old, my parents and I went on a road trip to meet up with my uncle in camp, with him and his family in Colorado. I don't remember much from that trip aside from a few small details, but I do have one specific, crystal-clear memory burned into my mind. One night when we went to sleep, my mom and I were in one tent, while my dad slept in another because the tents we bought ended up being pretty small. I remember waking up in the middle of the night to a lot of noise and seeing the tent glowing orange. I unzipped the tent opening, pulled the flaps aside, and saw three people quietly dancing around a campfire, maybe a foot away from our tent. I think they were all wearing masks, but I only remember one clearly. It was a square wooden mask with straw for hair and large painted eyes that now remind me a lot of Majora's Mask. My mom yanked me back from the opening, zipped the tent closed, and told me to be quiet and go back to sleep. For years, I assumed I had just dreamed it, but a few years back, I asked her about it, and it turns out it really did happen. These people had just shown up in the middle of the night and stayed there until sunrise. My mom couldn't get my dad's attention in the other tent and was afraid to get out and confront them alone while I was with her, so she stayed awake the entire time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Entire night, afraid they might set the tent on fire, while my dad slept through everything like nothing was happening. In the morning, he almost didn't believe her because the strangers had cleaned up every trace of the fire in front of our tent. From that point on, my mom insisted that we all stay in my uncle's RV. We never went camping again. Story 36. When I was really young, maybe 4 or 5, my sister, 7 or 8, and I hung out with our neighborhood kids a lot. They were a male, 15 or 16, and female, 13 or 14, brother and sister. And the other neighbor was a female, 6 or 7. Seven. We lived surrounded by woods and farms, which could explain why two teenagers hung out with little kids. There was never anything to do. We often went into the woods across the street. This stretch of woods wasn't very large or thick. On this day, we decided to go. And as a bratty little kid, I refused to wear shoes even while walking through the woods. We went slow because, obviously, my feet hurt from stepping on so many things. Then I noticed the group stop. They were all frozen. That's when I noticed a large man in overalls holding an axe. We knew all the adults who lived nearby, even the farmer, because there were very few houses. We didn't know him. He raised his axe above his head like he was going to swing, and that's what snapped everyone into moving. All the girls took off running, and the boy threw me over his shoulder and bolted too. I was faced backward, so I could see the man running with the axe still up. I don't remember what happened after we made it out of the woods, other than never seeing him again. In case you're wondering, there were no reported crimes in the area. It's a small town, so I would know, though an elderly couple down the road had been killed about a year prior in a home invasion. I was young, so I don't know anything else, other than that it was described as gruesome and brutal. I remember the man with the axe clearly, but always assumed it was a story I made up in my head or dreamed. I never talked about it. My sister never talked about it. The older neighbors moved soon after. This was planned before the incident. The younger neighbor never talked about it either, and eventually moved until last year, about 15 years later, when she came to visit. We hadn't seen her in years. Somehow the man with the axe came up in conversation. My sister and neighbor confirmed all parts of the story. They even remembered more than I did. It was all real. Story 37. This happened when I was around 7. The day started normally, and when I got tired, I decided to take a nap in a room that used to be mine. By the time I fell asleep, I was in a room. It was my room. What scared me was that it was exactly my room. Every detail, every corner, even the backpack I had put down earlier was in the same place I left it when I got home. I was terrified and confused. I went to my door and knocked to get my mom's attention. I looked back for a second, and the door was now just a wall. Filled with fear, I lay on my bed, thinking it was just a dream and everything would be fine. For context, there was a small rectangular window next to my TV. When I went to look, I froze in fear. I couldn't move. I couldn't feel anything but dread. At that moment, something began crawling out of the window. It was so vivid I could describe every detail. Red eyes, legs made of dark mist, leaving a trail. No mouth, no nose, no ears. And indescribable arms that barely seemed to exist. It was my worst nightmare. The figure was so dark it could be seen even in pure darkness. It came closer and closer until it touched me. At that moment, I woke up in fear. I looked around and saw it was almost midnight. My things were scattered everywhere, broken and torn. I had fallen off my bed with a strange mark on my chest, the exact spot where the figure had touched me. It was bleeding. I banged on my locked door, which I couldn't open until my parents opened it. After that, I had to see a psychologist and work with a therapist because of how terrifying and traumatic it was. I even drew the figure to give the psychologist an idea. Even he was unsettled by it, but now I'm fine and healthy. Story 38. When I was 5 and my sister was 16, we were walking home from our maternal house. The road was quiet and she let me walk ahead. Suddenly, I heard a rapid popping sound, like fireworks. She quickly came beside me, told me to jump on her back like I used to, and then ran full speed until we reached home. I thought it was just a game. 12 years later, she told me those fireworks were actually gunshots, just 2 houses away. She never told our parents, afraid they'd be angry for letting us walk home alone.